Good morning. Happy Monday morning to everyone. Welcome to Whole Mother. I'm your host, Pat Johnson. We're at 90.1 FM in Houston. Welcome to our new listeners here on Monday mornings, and welcome to our regular listeners who have been with us just about 15 years, I think. Whole Mother is a voice in our community which educates and informs us. There are many decisions to be made out there as a parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle, neighbor. Whole Mother believes that we need to always make our choices out of rational thinking, choices that are made through education and research, not out of fear, especially fear that is imposed by those who stand to gain by our choices. It is hoped that the education you receive on this show will contribute to changing the way we birth and the way we parent. All humans are born good. I've seen more than 3,000 babies come into the world, and I can tell you there are no bad babies. There are no bad humans. All babies are born exactly the same in their goodness, their innocence, their curiosity, their brilliance, their ability to love and to trust. They're all born with the same delight in the world. It doesn't matter what country they're born in, what their skin color is, what language they're learning to speak, or how much money is in their family. We are all born with the same potential. We all come into the world in the same delight. If that's true, that humans are born without hate, judgment, shame, jealousy, then where do we learn those qualities if we're not born with them? Whole Mother is here to look at our parenting, which begins the very first moment of birth or at conception. My guest this morning is Maria Axner. She has spent the last 30 years as an activist working against oppression of all kinds. Recently, she's working to address the climate emergency and ending societal divisions that hamper solving this challenge. She speaks and leads workshops on the topic of anti-Semitism and racism on college campuses, at social justice organizations, and at worker organizations. She also works as a parent educator. 15 years ago, she was the director of a parents program in the Somerville Public Schools, supporting parents to be involved in their children's education. More recently, she was the director of the New England Jewish Labor Committee, where she organized the Jewish community to stand up with workers for their rights. Maria has taught listening skills through Sustaining All Life, United to End Racism projects of reevaluation counseling. Sustaining All Life is an international grassroots organization working to end the climate emergency within the context of ending all divisions among people. United to End Racism is a group of people of all backgrounds in many countries who are dedicated to eliminating racism in the world. Also in the studio this morning is Tressa Elgura. She's a community activist, a teacher, staff developer, and a parent. In the past 30 years, she has worked as a Latinx community organizer, specifically focusing on developing community among Latinx young people. She has a degree in bilingual education and taught dual language elementary and high school Spanish. She currently works as a trainer, teaching teachers to support the social emotional development of young people in the classroom and developing capacity for conversations regarding race, class, gender, climate, and more. Tressa works with Sustaining All Life and uses their climate tools and other climate work as well. She has helped to found 350 Brooklyn families so that she had a place to engage in family-friendly climate work and participates in Fridays for Future strikes with her climate activist children who are age 11 and 13. She also engages in climate activism with them and separately as well, both because it matters and because it matters to her children. Welcome to Whole Mother, both of you. Thank you so much for being here. First of all, tell us, you wrote a pamphlet, and the pamphlet is called Parents and the Climate Crisis. It's a fabulous pamphlet. I wish every parent had a copy of it. So I want to figure out how we can get a copy of this pamphlet into every home. Tell us about your journey, first of all, to writing this pamphlet.
Sure. Well, I became a parent 29 years ago when my daughter was born. And even then, I started to think about climate change. You know, the first time I looked into her eyes, I fell deeply in love, you know, as all parents do when we hold our children, you know. And I think that love sort of extends beyond our children to all children, children around the world, not just my daughter, my nephews, my nieces, their children to come. But you just get connected to everybody, all young people. And our babies and children look back at us and they fully expect that we will love them deeply and be with them as they grow. And they are confident that we will protect them. So, you know, so I think it's our generation's responsibility to leave them in a livable world. That's what we want to do. It took me a couple decades after my daughter was born to actually face the climate crisis and figure out what I could do about it. Of course, the warning signs were getting louder, and there were many people, more people that I could learn from as time went on. And so I started to become a climate activist. And I had already been a climate activist and worker rights, so switching to climate wasn't too hard. But I had to push myself a little to get going and learn about what I wanted to do. And then I retired partially so I could put more time into climate activism because I felt like that was the key issue. I also write about parent issues and I help parents on fighting for their rights. And so parents are my people. And climate change is really on the minds of all parents right now, because we all love our children with all our hearts. And we would do anything to assure that they not only survive, but also thrive and lead happy, meaningful lives. So I know that being a parent brings the climate crisis front and center, because we love our children so much. And our deep connection with them helps us, turns our minds and our hearts toward the future. And that's actually one of the advantages of being a parent, as I see it, that the future of our well-being, the future well-being of our children and our grandchildren really inspires us to address the climate emergency.
Yes, exactly. Tressa, what motivated you?
Thanks, Pat. You know, I was raised by an activist mom, and so I was always an activist, and I was always, it always mattered to me to be part of young people gaining full access to our power. So I was always an activist among young people. And in my 20s, I went to work on a farm in Mexico, and I saw, I spent the summer helping plant corn. And then I went back, I was in college. I was actually 20 years old. It was my last year of college. And I went back in January to help harvest the corn. This was in 1990. And it was the dry season. The corn is supposed to dry. Instead, it started to rain. And we were harvesting corn that was sprouting that people were never going to be able to use to grind into tortillas. Now, at that time, we called it global warming. We didn't call it a full-on climate crisis. But I have a letter that I wrote to my mom where I talked about global warming. Of course, I came back to college and these people that I loved fell further into poverty. They were subsistence farmers. So I've always been thinking about this issue and just experiencing it firsthand and being in touch with people that I care deeply about who have been on the front lines of it. So I then, as a mom, have raised my children to be activists, and climate became an issue that was important to them, among many other issues. But and when people started striking on, Greta Thunberg started striking on Fridays, right? And then there was a young woman, a 13-year-old young woman, who started doing that in New York City outside the UN. And so my son wanted to do that with her. And so I cleared out my Fridays, and we spent every Friday going to the UN with her. And that's how I got deeply involved with climate activism as a parent.
Very cool. I'd love to hear a little more about that at some point, but I think there's probably some discouragement with parents because they're already so overwhelmed with parenting. Can parents make a difference in the issue of climate change? Can they feel like my voice is significant?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And it's easy to think your voice isn't significant because you're one of many millions and actually billions of people. But we need many, many people in this movement right now. The more people that can write letters, get out in the streets, talk to their friends, every voice is significant, no matter what you do. If you make a phone call to your legislator once a week, that makes a difference. If you have a conversation with one friend, it makes a difference. If at some point you go to a meeting with Mothers Out Front or 350.org, to organizations, then that will also make a difference. And, you know, we all start out being completely overwhelmed. Being a parent is overwhelming enough. And then the climate crisis is overwhelming too. And it's, you know, it is hard for any human to feel like we make a difference in something that's so big, because all of us feel kind of irrelevant, I think, in a certain way. So we just have to decide that we are relevant, that we do make a difference, and we just try. And that's a good decision to make. We're all part of a big chorus. We're one voice in a big chorus, or you could think of it as one piece of a great big jigsaw puzzle, but you can't see the whole puzzle, but you're one piece, one important piece. So I think if we think of it that way, that works. Yes. And then also, you know, Tressa will talk about this more, but just talking to our friends and relatives makes a huge difference, because this is on everyone's mind, and people are afraid sometimes to get a conversation going about it, but they're really happy to talk about it and unload their worries and get a little direction if someone can get the conversation started. So, you know, just like standing out at the playground with people, when people come and pick up their kids at your house, just getting a conversation started is really a very radical thing to do. And then it's also about building relationships, which is really one of the most important things we could do. And we do that all the time as parents, because relationships are the foundation of organizing. And when you know people and they know you and they trust you, they will follow you. So building relationships is really important. We also we're in a unique position as parents to influence people around us, because we're not only in contact with many other parents, which is very important, but we also interact with schools and other institutions that affect families. So we have the authority to speak about issues having to do with young people and families, and climate change affects young people and families. So we can be bold in sharing information about the climate. So like most other people, we have more power to change things than we feel like we do. And the other thing is, it's always important to do things with someone else. It's like really good to have a buddy with you, a climate parent buddy that you get to check in with. So yeah, don't do this alone. Do this with other people. That's kind of what I think. Tressa, what do you think?
Thanks, Maria. This is such a great question. You know, I think it is overwhelming. One of the things that we're seeing more and more people are writing about, that there's people are feeling so overwhelmed by climate that it makes people feel like they can't move, right? And so how do we navigate that? There is so much. And the big way that we navigate it is by doing it together. There's so many, you know, there can be frenzy and panic about, like, well, are you recycling and are you composting and are you eating meat and are you buying secondhand clothes? And, you know, people are so scared. It's scary. It's not that those things don't matter. They do matter. But actually, what makes the biggest difference is when we move forward together. We do those small things because they can help us. They can help keep us hopeful. They can help keep us connected to the issue. But it's really the mass movement that makes noise and that builds hope. When adults show up at the young people's marches, the young people feel incredibly buoyed by that. You know, and people, one of the things I've seen now is more and more adults are walking around with signs that say the kids are right, or listen to the kids, you know, that it is, young people are organizing on this issue ferociously. They're looking at their future and they're feeling scared, and that having adults in there with them is just tremendously hopeful for them. And it makes a really big difference. It also makes a difference to us to see one another together and to see that there's action happening and that we're doing something together, right? I think Maria's point about talking to people at the playground, you know, I was thinking about it, and there are groups of, so you'll find there are groups of parents that are talking about it in a very panicked way, focusing completely on climate change. And then there are other people who are not focusing on it at all, right? And those seem to be two different responses to navigating fear. You know, just putting it aside or focusing on it completely. And so sometimes I find in those spaces where people are super, super focused on it, trying to create some kind of mechanism for people to notice good things. What are good things that have happened in climate over the course of last week? And getting to share some of that and getting to listen to one another more deeply about our fears rather than about the specifics of if I recycled enough this week, but like getting to unload some of that with one another. And then in the circles where people aren't talking about it at all, right? Getting to, again, share some piece of news or information. And it could be a good piece of news or information. It doesn't, the doomsday approach isn't, it doesn't pull people in so much. It's, you know, it pulls in a certain group of people, but we want to be able to pull in everybody. And I think that, you know, Maria's point about having a buddy to think about this with, my son has a friend who also wanted to go to the strikes, and her mother also cleared off her Fridays. And so the four of us went together, and that has made a huge difference to all of us and to the teenagers that we were there with as well, having the adults around to support them. And also, you know, there are different times that as an adult at those protests that I was able to play an important role for them, where other adults showed up and maybe were co-opting some of what the young people were doing, and the young people weren't sure how to handle that, and I could step in as a grown-up. And so there, you know, there are key things that I've been able to do there that has mattered to them. And it is hard to tell that what we do matters, but when you work with young people, it's easier to tell because they notice and appreciate it.
Something I really like that Marina said is, like, we have more power to change things than we feel like we do. So expand a little bit more. How can parents pay attention to this issue when they're already overwhelmed with being a parent and trying to raise a family?
Yeah, big question. So first of all, do not be hard on yourself about what you cannot do and what you can do. I mean, it already being a parent is a heroic job. And if you can only take care of your family, okay, that's a huge feat. And there will be times where you'll be able to step in and be an activist, and there'll be other times that you won't be able to. You'll be having a young person who's going through a hard time, and you just need to pay total attention to them, and everything else is sidelined for a while. But The reality is that being a parent is harder, has become harder and harder, and will continue, I think, to get harder as our economic situation is not going in a very good direction. We're all overwhelmed. We don't have the time we need to parent the way we want to. We would like more time to play and play with our children and enjoy our families and just recover from everyday challenges. So it's understandable, but there's ways to integrate climate change work with what you do with your family. You know, you get to have fun with your kids while you go to a protest. And Tressa will talk more about what kinds of things that young people and families together have figured out. But you do it with other families, with your young people. You follow their lead to see what they want to do. So, you know, there's ways of working it into family life that doesn't take away from your family. And then also, you know, COVID, as hard as it's been, has helped us to understand that parenting is really a job all by itself. You know, it's difficult, if not impossible, to meet the demands of parenting when you work a paid job at the same time. And, you know, what's more valuable and important than raising children? That is essential, as we've called essential workers, to the well-being of our society. Is, you know, young people who feel secure because their parents paid attention to them. So we need to be kind to ourselves and understand that we're good parents and that parenting is important. That's number one. And also, I think we can really consider that parenting and climate change are linked, as so many things are linked, so many intersectionalities. So because we understand that parents need resources if we're going to do this most important job. And in many countries, there are more resources that are available to parents than in the US. So it's more about putting our society's focus on raising strong, healthy young people rather than making profits for a few wealthy people. And with climate change, it's kind of similar. Like, we value the earth and we value nature, and that's more important than making profits for extracting fossil fuels and hurting our wonderful Mother Earth. I mean, and it is our mother. As we are parents, the earth is our parent. So yes, this is very, you know, very related. And I just want to say, right now, during the recording of this show, there's a big struggle in Congress going on right now for the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill that addresses the issue of human infrastructure as well as climate infrastructure. So it proposes spending money to pay for childcare and pay for caring for the elderly, and also for spending money to fix the environment and for creating jobs around that. All human important things to do. So this is a big fight because people in the US haven't really directed funding to human needs on a big scale for a really long time. And we need to change our value system to make it more about families and young people and all of those good things that we care about. Tressa, do you want to talk more about how climate change fits into the day-to-day life of a parent?
Sure. Thank you, Maria. You know, adding things to an already really busy life as a parent, it's really hard. It's challenging to think about, right? So as I said, I decided to make it part of our together time. And, you know, Pat mentioned that I helped found the 350 Families group in Brooklyn. I mean, essentially what I did is I wrote to them and I said, look, I can't ever go to your meetings there in the evenings and I can't bring my children out at that time. That's, you know, bedtime. And, you know, is there anybody else who has young children and would like to do this together? And sure enough, we founded 350 Brooklyn Families. And then I had been in touch with Mothers Out Front, and then Sunrise Kids started happening and we were, you know, in conversations with them. So having the opportunity to be around other parents of young children and think about creative ways to do things together created both a social network, made it fun, made it a place that I could be with my children. Some of the things that we came up with. So we started having kind of these meetings in the middle of the day where our kids could play together and we could talk to one another and come up with things. And then we came up with actions that involved our children. Some of the things we did one year for Mother's Day, we did a letter writing campaign outside Chuck Schumer's house. We had materials there for young people to write letters. A couple of guys from the neighborhood who played guitar set up and just sang songs. So the kids were making letters to Schumer. And we created like a format for it so that they had like a box that they could draw a picture in and some lines that they could write something on so that it was developmentally appropriate for young people of different ages to be able to send a message to Schumer, right? So they were making those. These guys were playing music. There was chalk so that they could write on the sidewalk outside of his house. We made a little wooden mailbox with a bell, and the children would go online and put their letter in the mailbox and ring the bell. And so we had a count of how many letters, you know, we wrote. So that was one thing that we did. Another thing, there was a local thing here in New York called the Community Climate Reinvestment Act. And so we were trying to make, this was the first action was not during COVID. Then during COVID, we did an action where we had people signed up for creating cardboard of different letters and to make a sign that was joined together on string. So that, you know, we organized it by buying these placards that were all the same size. People signed up for different letters and you got to create artwork with your letter on it. And then we showed up on the day of and we clothespinned them to the string and we stood on the courthouse steps holding up our sign. But so we were all socially distanced with our letters that together said, pass the Community Climate Investment Act, right? And then they had a couple of musicians there playing music and they made a video about it. It's on YouTube. And so, you know, we can send that around. But so that kind of thing, that the children got to do artwork, they could stand there, we could be in the pictures, and gave us space to talk to our children about the issues separately and be involved in a creative way that we could then take a stand together, right? So those are some examples of things that we did when my children were younger. And then, as I mentioned, as they got older, I started going to the Fridays for Future strikes with them. And in fact, we'll be heading up to DC in a couple of weeks to follow the call that Indigenous peoples have made to ask for support. And so I had a conversation with my children about that and did they want to do that? And, you know, we did, one of the things we did, we went to a nonviolent direct action training together and talked about it and learned about it and decided that neither of their parents are going to risk arrest. We are going to parent our children rather than risk arrest, but we are going to go stand there and be there with those who are able to risk arrest and support the action.
Very inspiring. There are so many issues right now for parents to look at, like racism, sexism, classism, all the oppressions that affect families. How do we help families? How do we help families find ways to contribute here?
Yeah. So, our world faces so many challenges. I would say, in addition to the climate crisis, but all related to the climate crisis, you know, so racism, sexism, classism, anti-Semitism, young people's oppression, and all other oppressions affect our families, our communities, and our world. And when it comes right down to it, I think many people are understanding this a little more, is that the people who have done the least harm to the environment are the ones who are suffering the most. And the people with the least resources are suffering the most. So, you know, manufacturing and is often located in areas where there are poor people and people of color. So how do we pay attention to the climate emergency and also, you know, address these other problems? And we just, you know, we have to, I'll just say that we have to address them all the same time. that this is one big problem that it reflects systemic problems. So go ahead, Tressa, you take it from there.
Thank you. I think, you know, climate justice has always been an issue of race and class. We haven't always understood it that way. Mm-hmm. If you go back to the story that I told in 1990 about working on this farm in Mexico, the vast majority of people from that town and from the towns around that town are no longer there. They are undocumented in the United States. And so when we look at who's here and why they're here, we think of people as economic refugees coming here because they want the economics and the resources that we have. We fail to understand that if climate hadn't affected their crops, if they had been able to continue farming the way that they have done for, you know, thousands of years, right, in their native lands, they would have stayed there. They didn't want to come here. And so we forget that. And we think that issue of undocumented people in the United States is separate from climate. It's not. And that's an issue of race, it's an issue of class, and it's an issue of climate. So there are more and more groups that are coming together under the banner of social justice. I mean, indigenous people have been moving this issue for so many years. They believed firmly in this issue before it was called an issue, right? It was just their way of life. And so there's more and more conversation about the connections between these issues. And there are some groups that are focused solely on climate, but there are more and more groups that are looking at the issue of social justice and how all of these things fit together. And even the groups that are really specifically about climate are beginning to understand those connections more and more and understand the importance of following Indigenous leaders, right? Of looking to communities of color, of looking to working class people for what the issues are and for solutions that actually really work, right? And supporting that leadership. So I think that, we know the details, right? In terms of that communities of color and working class people and poor people have been on the front lines in regards to climate. As Maria was saying, right, they're more likely to live near factories, garbage incinerators, power plants, manufacturing, yeah, and that exhaust and those fumes, right? So all of this directly affects parents and children, affects, you know, how many children in my children's school have asthma, and what does that mean in terms of their attendance and their participation in school, right? And why do they have asthma? So I think that, you know, if we want to build a worldwide community that actually cares for all children, we have to address race, we have to address class, and we have to address climate. The other thing I would say is that it's important as a parent, I think, in terms of not overstretching ourselves. I mean, we are already overstretched and it's hard to do that even more, right? Is to find an organizing home. So to find a group of people that sees things the way that you see them, where you can build relationships and where you can find sustenance, right? So that if you're with a group that addresses those issues, then the work fills you up rather than depleting you. And I think that's really key. It's really key for us to do work in a way that's sustainable. If we want to sustain the earth, we have to sustain ourselves.
Good point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. I just want to add to that. So, you know, the whole purpose of oppression, which is systemic, is that it divides us from each other. It makes us feel like we're not the same as other people who are getting ripped off or oppressed in different ways, that somehow they're getting a better deal than we are. And, or, you know, they're causing a big problem. They're the problem. And it's really not that case. I mean, the case is that the system is the problem that really funnels wealth to a small group of people and keeps the rest of us just hurting and, you know, not having access to making a lot of decisions in a democratic, cooperative way. And so, you know, we need to think about that as we do this work, is looking for unity among different groups, among different people with different backgrounds, different races, ethnic groups, economic classes, that coming together is the quickest path to stopping climate change and the degradation of the environment. And that people who do have privilege are often told, you know, you'll be okay. You can build your little fort and live in an isolated, gated community up on a mountain, and you'll be fine. Well, that's totally a lie. And it lulled people's into inaction and keeping that, believing them, making them believe that they're separate from other people. Well, in fact, the planet is all of ours, and we all breathe the same air, and we all drink the same water. And, you know, we think that there's some safe place. There is no safe place. What happens in Africa will affect what happens in Vermont, you know, and we have to just understand that we're all in the same boat. We have to care for each other as a whole.
Yes. Very good. So how do we talk to our children about climate crisis, and how do we help them face their fears about it?
You know, one thing to remember is that if you don't talk to them about it, someone else. So even though it's unpleasant, it can be a hard conversation, it can be scary, and none of us like to scare our children, it's worth having it come from us so that our children feel connected to us about the issue and can address things with us. Doing things in a way that's appropriate for their age is important. Young children need time to play in the dirt, to hear the birds chirping and notice the flowers. That's actually good for us too. It might not be our inclination, but it's actually really important for us too. And that's how young people, that's how all humans learn to be connected to the earth, right? We learn to love it and to observe it by being part of it, by working with it, by being out in it. And that's how we learn to care. That's how we notice, right? If there's garbage in the wrong place, we can learn about compost and worms, and we consider what it means to have access to water and to use it sparingly, right? And so we can have these conversations casually as we do things. So in small bite-sized bits, right? And we can say things like, oh, well, let's not let the water run because it's a precious resource. We want to make sure there's enough for everybody, and kind of keep it as that simple, light way rather than how are you letting the water run, right? And it's those kinds of things that communicate thought and care rather than fear. And that's hard because we feel scared, right? Which is why we need spaces to unload our fears so that we can keep that light perspective with our children. When they do ask questions about larger things, which they will because they get information in the outside world, or because as they're seeing your responses to things, or, you know, well, why does it matter how much water I use, right? Why is composting important? That we follow their lead for how much information they want. If they stop paying attention, and this happens with my children on all subjects, they'll ask me a question and I start to answer the question and then they stop paying attention. I'll say, do you want me to keep answering that question? You know, and it's like, no, you gave me the key piece of information I wanted. I'm done now. Mm-hmm. So I try and track where they're paying attention. And if they're not paying attention, then it means I need to stop rather than I need to insist that they pay attention to me. And it's because it's, you know, it's scary. It's a lot of information, and we need to learn to follow young people at their pace around this. It's also really important that we listen to their fears, right? And take their fears seriously instead of poo-pooing their fears, or instead of saying that we can make it all better. They need the space to show, and they need to have us really listen. Soothing them or quieting them down communicates both that we minimize the fear and that we don't take seriously how they're feeling, and we don't take seriously the content of what they're saying to us. We all need, and I know it's challenging, right? Because we haven't had people listen to us about our fears. And so it can be extra hard to try and listen to someone else when nobody's listened to you. But that is what children, it's what all of us need. So trying to find that place where we can at least stay quiet and work to really try and just hear them and let them show how they're feeling makes a difference. The So, and of course, listening to them won't make the fears go away, but it will let them know that we are there with them and that they don't have to be alone with their fear, which is really the critical piece for all of us. We all do things that we live in a world that's scary. There's all kinds of scary things that happen, but it makes a difference when I can talk to someone about the thing that scares me, right? And the thing is with our children, we can't promise them that everything's going to be okay. We don't know that. What we can do is commit to facing the challenges together, to listening to them, to staying close to them, to supporting them in whatever way that they would like to take part in climate work, and to doing our part, right? And my children care, even some of the climate work that I do that doesn't involve them, they want me to do it. It makes a difference to them when they know that I'm going to do that work. So letting them hear from us that we care, that we take them seriously, and that we'll stick with them, we'll do it together with them, really, really makes a big difference.
Yeah, that's great, Tressa. And I guess I would like to also just add that sometimes our children don't sit down and tell us exactly what they're afraid of. Like they'll be really upset, like after they hear of something about climate change or something else that's worrisome, they may get really upset that you didn't put the right amount of mustard on their sandwich. And they'll throw it across the room, or they'll throw themselves down on the floor and start crying. And you don't necessarily know what it's about. It may not really have anything to do with the sandwich, but they need to cry. You know, that's how they figure stuff out in a different way, in an emotional way. And that's how they process stuff. And what we get to do is really be there with them while they sit on our laps and cry about whatever it is. Or if they throw a tantrum, we just say, yeah, it is really hard. I get it. We don't let them hurt somebody, but you know, they have emotions. They have real emotions, and we can listen to them as parents, even if it comes out in ways we don't exactly understand what they're upset about at that moment.
I'd like to bring up the pamphlet that the two of you wrote.
Yes.
Called Parent and Climate Change. Would you, before I ask you another question, would you tell the audience how can they find this pamphlet, which is valuable?
Oh, thank you. It's Parents in the Climate Crisis. And it's if you go to the sustainingalllife.org website, just sustainingalllife.org, and you can click on resources. And there's a long list of resources in alphabetical order. If you scroll down, and you'll find Parents and the Climate Crisis. And you can order that. And I think it's either $2 or $3, and very, you know, not too expensive. And I think you can order a PDF of it as well.
Yes.
So, so that's easy to get a hold of. Again, that's sustainingalllife.org. And go to the resources page and you'll find Parents and the Climate Crisis.
Very good.
Yeah.
There's a lot out there for all of us to be afraid of. How can parents handle our own fears?
Yeah.
So we don't communicate worry to our children. And at the same time, how can we get support for ourselves as parents?
Right. We really need that support, don't we? Oh,
yes.
My gosh. As parents, we often worry, you know, we worry about our children. Are they going to be okay in this world? We worry about climate, and our worries don't really help our children. You know, they get in the way of us enjoying our children and figuring out how to take action or how to be there with them, how to solve the big problems. So, but we all worry. So, you know, just as our children need to unload feelings with some attention and throw themselves on the floor and cry, we also need to unload our worries and upsets with someone listening to us. You know, we need a buddy, like we were talking about before. We need a buddy to talk with about this, or a few buddies is good also, that you can regularly check in with to help you think about this, and you get to cheer each other on. So, you know, we have a way of taking turns and listening to each other and listening in exchange. You can also find that at the sustainingalllife.org website. But, you know, we take turns, and one person listens and the other person talks, and we time it, you know, sometimes 5 minutes, sometimes 10 minutes each. Sometimes we do it in a circle, sometimes just with one other person. And then we just talk about what we're thinking. And, you know, have you ever had a chance to just talk and not have someone interrupt you and say, oh, that reminds me, or let me tell you about my story? It's very powerful to have someone just listen to you. And, you know, sometimes you talk, sometimes you need to laugh, sometimes you need to cry, you sometimes need a good cry. And then you just kind of like, wow, that's a lot better. Got that out of me.
I need to be mad.
You need to be mad. Exactly. Right. Exactly. Sometimes we need to be mad. So it's really good if you can, like I said, set up a buddy. I know people, parents who during COVID had regular meetings with parents like once a week or once every 2 weeks, where they got together because they just needed it so bad. And each took a turn to talk and everybody else listened and just was with them and supported them and was on their side, because we get really isolated, you know, and there's nothing worse than being by yourself in your house, worrying about whether the world's going to end, you know, like that's horrible. So just having another person with you and looking at the good news together and all and doing things together, that really helps. The listening without interruption. I really can't say that enough. Yeah, everyone gets a turn to be listened to. Go ahead, Tressa.
You know, I regularly use this process that Maria is describing. I use it. I mentioned that a friend of mine and her daughter come with us to the Fridays for Future Strikes. Well, I taught her this process and we use it together to unload the things that are worrying us. I also use it with groups when I'm organizing, just, you know, teaching them a little bit about how to listen to one another and asking pointed questions and giving people space to talk those things through with one another in those timed, in those time spaces. And what I find is that usually people want more time. They are so hungry to talk about these things. So, you know, we all need this space. I mean, that's why you have those groups in the playground where people are desperately trying to figure out what we should do and what the next thing is, right? It's because we're scared. And if you can offer timed turns where people have a real chance to begin to process some of the stuff that they're scared about, then some of that frenzy dissipates and the group can actually be sometimes more relaxed and more productive together, because they get the chance to really dig into whatever it is that's propelling them so much. So I find that using this process makes a big difference. It makes a big difference to me. When I get anxious, and, you know, I was saying about how it's hard to listen to your children's fears if you don't have anybody listen to your fears. Right. And when I'm not so relaxed around my child, if I can find somebody else to listen to me about it, sometimes it's just my spouse and I'll say, you know, can you just listen to me for a few minutes? I just need to vent about something. And I'll just kind of go off about whatever I need to go off about. And then I can go back to my child and have much better attention to offer them to listen to whatever they need from me.
And I just wanted to point out that you talk about the process of listening and some guidelines about it in the pamphlet, Parent and the Climate Crisis.
Yeah. And our children, you know, more than anything, they want us. You know, they just want to be close to us. They want us to reassure them and be with them. And the more we can unload with other people, the more we get to be present in the way that Tressa is talking about.
And more relaxed.
Yeah, and more relaxed. Right. They don't really want our worry very much.
Tell our audience about other parent organizations out there that are organizing around climate change.
Yeah. I have a few here. There are more, I know. But there's Moms Out Front. There's, which is one that I'm active in and I really love. Mothers Out Front has chapters in many parts of the country, and it organizes on a national level, a state level, and a local level. So like in my town, Mothers Out Front is focusing on gas leaks that the utility company has refused to repair. And we are getting Eversource to do something about it. And we've been working on it for a while, but also works on national policy and state policy. And then there's Moms Clean Air Force, which is working hard to help children who suffer from asthma. There's Climate Dads, and that's for dads, grandfathers, godfathers, and that really aims to create greater support for climate action among men and male caregivers. And, you know, it offers a lot of ideas and research and tools to make climate consciousness a part of daily life and to raise nature-loving kids. MADRE is an international organization that partners with local grassroots organizing around the world, mostly mothers who are working on local solutions. Then there's another one, Mothers of the Three Affiliated Tribes of Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arika Nation in North Dakota. And they are standing up against mega oil and gas projects in the reservation. And I find this particularly interesting because they're also getting support from indigenous women's groups in Colombia, Guatemala, Israel, Kenya, Nepal, and Nicaragua. So there's parents who are working around the world coming together to address climate change problems. And I love that. To me, that's just great that parents are doing that.
Yeah. Yes. We just have a few minutes left, but would the two of you share how do we build a new world based on people caring about each other and treating each other well?
You know, I think this is a marvelous opportunity. Everywhere you go, more and more people are understanding how connected we all are. It's an exciting time with lots of creative ideas and energy for creating a world that really works for people rather than profit. There's so many groups to join and to be a part of, and it's incredibly hopeful when you get to be with like-minded people working to make our world a healthy place for everybody. I just wanted to throw in, you know, Maria mentioned so many wonderful groups, and just as a reminder that any group that's out there, you can turn it into a group for families.
That's right.
You know, and Fridays for Future, right, with young people.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Very good.
And Sunrise, of course. Sunrise for young people, too. Yeah. The climate crisis really requires us to recognize that the well-being of each of us depends on the well-being of all communities and all human beings and other living things. And our world is just one small world that's tied together. And our atmosphere doesn't know anything about borders. And our children are going to be excited to learn about people around the world and how they are dealing with the crisis. You know, the cultures of indigenous peoples emphasize the interrelatedness of all living things on Earth. And I think we can follow their lead in living in harmony with the Earth's resources. And we just get to care about each other and not be alone. And please don't forget to go to the Sustaining All Life website. It's just sustainingalllife.org. And again, you can look at the whole thing, it's interesting. Look under resources to find Parents and the Climate Crisis pamphlet. So fun to be here with you.
Thank you both so much for being on Whole Mother and for everything that you're doing to build a new world based on people caring about each other and about the planet. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat,
for having us.
The dream that you dare to, why?